Three Dogs North is an attempt to objectify the subjective with little violence as possible. The following has been torn from its origins in space and time and put entirely at your disposal.
Here we are.
We're out of practice.
Are we recording?
Yeah, we're recording.
That's the first time I've heard somebody say 2:30 and you haven't made your joke, Connor.
Oh, yeah. Dang it. There's a student at our Newman Center, Crystal, who every time I ask her what's up, she says the sky. To this day, I mean, she's been doing it for like 3 years. And to this day, I still ask her what's up without thinking. And then she'll say the sky and I'll roll my eyes, but also laugh.
Get you committed. Every time, huh?
She laughs every time.
Committed to the bit.
Yeah, she's great.
Father Robbie Cotta, if he gets a bit in his head, he will commit to it, come hell or high water.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I've never seen anybody like it.
Mm-mm. No, there's a true like appreciation for comedy in that guy.
Yeah.
And it's full send.
He has comedic stamina. Like, I will convince you that this is funny.
One of the funniest but also cringiest commit to the bit situations I've ever been in. I was in line to get a sandwich at a place called Fontano's, which is a great Italian sub place near the Newman Center. There was a guy talking to someone kind of aside from the line, and he said, Fontana's is one of the reasons why I'll never go on a low-carb diet. And then I just thought, that's kind of a lame joke, but whatever. And I realized that the guy that he was talking to did not speak English as a first language. So very quickly after he said the joke, he asked the guy, do you know what a low-carb diet is? And he starts to proceed. He's like, some people want to lose weight and they go on these diets. And so in the moment, I'm like buying my sandwich during this time. So then as I'm wrapping up, I hear him say again to the guy, so that's why I said Fontana's is one of the reasons I'll never go on a low carb diet.
Man.
And then as I'm walking out of the store, I hear him say to the other person in the group who wasn't listening, who must have said, what? He goes, do you know what a low carb diet is?
Oh, no.
And he was about to explain the joke a second time. And then to say it again to hopefully maybe get the laugh then. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, so you didn't know the guy?
No, it was just total strangers.
Yeah. You just wonder if that's like a personality kind of quirk or nuance to that guy, if like he needed to be understood or something. Yeah, but that's...
To go for it again, though, that was what got me. Because I was already kind of chuckling, like, man, he went for it and he's trying it again. And then... the second person to also go into, I'm going to explain what the diet is.
Yeah, and to have the lack of awareness of like the whole thing where everybody says, if you have to explain a joke, it's not a good joke.
Mm-hmm.
And he doubled down on the explanation and the joke.
Yep.
Nice, dude. Nice.
Well, what do you want to talk about, Rob? You're the one that called this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I blame you.
What could we talk about? I'm reading a book right now called An Episode of Sparrows. Shout out to Emily Hinnish for mailing that to me. It's a very nice. It's beautiful book.
Beautiful
so far,
book.
But I'm not quite
beautiful.
It's
book.
Beautiful. Yeah, it loves me. I'm not quite far enough in. I'm probably a third of the way done. So to really garner maybe a lot of reflection from it, I'm going to go see Dune.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's
today.
Today?
Some crummy weather. Yeah, it's out today.
Oh.
Yeah, that looks really good.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So maybe we could talk about... the sci-fi genre. That's just something we can talk about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to see Dune. And somebody was asking me about it the other day. And I was like, I think in sci-fi, I like sci-fi, but I'm not a sci-fi nerd. Me, like, in the good way of like, people just get into it, man. And like, they know the details. And I just go to be entertained. Like, so I'm not expecting, I don't think too much on this, but that's all I have so far. Someone else.
I liked about Dune. The first one was, it has this kind of like uber futuristic. I think it's like 50,000 years from now or something crazy, right? It's in the tens of thousands of years from now. It's not like Back to the Future that was like 30 years from now, they're going to have hoverboards. So the civilization is completely different, you know, but it also has very medieval type, like House of Lords and clans and
bagpipes,
all that stuff. Yeah. So there's a lot of propriety and pomp and circumstance and robes, which is cool. So, and also the kind of spiritualism, like the kid and his mom are sort of part of this Gnostic order. While at the same time, there's like the these dark forces. But the thing that really struck me, I mean, the scene that when him and his father's basically kind of telling him he's the chosen one. He's like, he's got to kind of take this family into the next mission they have, which is to run this planet with the spice. He says something like, and what if I don't want to do it? And his father says, then you'll still be all I ever needed you to be, which is my son.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall that scene?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was kind of bowled over. I did not expect to hear that in that movie. I never read the book. But that says a lot. And it's pretty countercultural. I don't know if that's maybe being dramatic or something, but it just seemed so, dang, that's a Christian idea. You know,
it's a Christian idea. And if you have more on that, dive into it. But the dynamic between the father and son, the family as far as part of like this royal family or noble family, it's very cool. Because I watched it I watched Dune 1 a couple weeks ago with my brother because this one is coming out. And I don't know if it's, I don't know where the line comes from, but if it's Lord of the Rings or it's probably elsewhere as well, but just like, just the notion of a desire to be worthy, to be like buried with your fathers, like to be part of a line and a family and like something that is bigger than you. And I do think that's a cool dynamic of what you're saying there, of like, they portray it in a way of like, he loves his son, but he's also preparing him to lead, which is like very hard to do. I would say that was probably my favorite part of the movie as well.
Yeah. I forget they were walking on the hill, like where the graves of their,
they were visiting their ancestors before they left. Yeah. The world.
Man, that's another aspect of that super long length of time is, it's how I felt in Jerusalem when you're like a place that has just been inhabited for thousands and thousands of years. You feel at the same time connected to that history, but also so far from it. I don't know if that makes sense, but you know, like in Chicago, the oldest things are, this church down the street from me was built in 1855, and everything else, you know, besides a few other buildings, everything else is post 1871 because of the fire. And so I feel connected in a way to everything. Like I can imagine the people who made these buildings and why they did it and what their lives were about. Maybe they wore a little bit different clothes and didn't have smartphones, but like, yeah, in Jerusalem, there's these graves of people buried 3,000 years ago. Their lives were totally different than mine. And yet you feel a certain connection to reality that you don't feel in a more recent thing, you know, where we all kind of we're all sort of superficially the same. I've been reading Kristen Lavrin's Daughter off and on. You guys read that book?
Yeah.
Most of it.
It's a similar kind of feel with the medieval Norwegian kings and all this stuff. Like, it's pretty opaque to me. Like, what's the politics that's going on here? But she does such a good job, Sigrid Undset, of communicating the human experience of it, even though their culture and their customs are so different. And the fact that it's Catholic Norway still, you know, you also feel it's the same Eucharist, it's the same priesthood, all that stuff. But just the way that it was incarnated was in feudal Norwegian society, you know? So yeah, that's what I think is cool about Dune, why it's a fun world to visit, and why I think sci-fi nerds like sci-fi, is because you get to imagine like what it would be like to be us, but in a super ancient or super futuristic society and setting. Because it's still ultimately about love, right? Him and his mother, and they find that that race of people with the blue eyes and everything. And I'm hoping that it's a Christ narrative. I don't know how it ends, but maybe Rob can spoil it once he's seen it.
You know I can.
No, and I think there's... it's been a little while since I've seen Dune. So I don't remember exactly the details, just a lot of like giant worms that come out of the earth, and that actress Zendaya with the blue eyes. I do remember that. That's about, those are the details that I remember.
The big worms and the blue eyes.
Yeah. I can't really remember much else, to be honest. But I do like even just your little synopsis there. I think there's another component to a lot of sci-fi, like Star Wars. I don't know if it's the case in Star Trek, but even in like The Matrix, there's this like delight that we have in hearing a story that's a prophecy, and watching somebody come into a prophecy, like to be the chosen one, and seeing them like live into that, and what are they called to, and how are they supposed to act? And, you know, even I think I shared this with you guys. I watched The Crown with Father Matt, my roommate, and all that story is about people who are like, they're kind of chosen, and they're living into this massive task that's bigger than themselves and connects them to the past and will propel them into the future and all that different stuff. But I have always loved those prophecy stories. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll always enjoy The Matrix, because there's something cool. Well, it's just an awesome movie, one. But there's,
I know Kung Fu.
I know. There's something cool, and I think like deeply attractive, that you're destined for something, and like there's a plan for you to live in, that you are chosen, you're the chosen one to some extent, and then you have to kind of live into that, which means that there's like this big plan that's dependent on like your cooperation into it. And I think that's so attractive, because although we're not like the Messiah, like the Messiah, like Jesus, the Savior, we actually all are chosen, and we all have this like really cool destiny that God has made for us. And so I think to see that being played out in cinema like that, it calls us to something. You're like, dude, what if I was the chosen one? Like, and you're like, you kind of are, you're not the Savior, but you were chosen by God, and he has this plan for you. And it means like he needs you there. Like, you are important to his story. So I think I've always liked that aspect of it.
Yeah. Well, I like that. And that reminds me of, what was the Monsignor Shea talk at SEEK that I loved as well, but it was the one that certainly I think got the most attention from the big SEEK conference a couple months ago. But, and I think what he did in it is like, and I think Father John Ricardo is talking about this a little bit. But there's a book out called The Christian Cosmic Narrative. And it's how it was explained to me. I haven't read it yet. Is that there's clearly still this like attraction to big epic narratives. So like you see the popularity of like the Marvel movies or like a Dune. I mean, just the stuff that we're talking about there, whether if it's like someone kind of being chosen and coming into their own through all these circumstances and worlds and imagination or whatever, just kind of this like narrative at the big scale with like big repercussions and all of that. And the idea is that like we need to learn to tell the Christian story again in the form of that type of narrative, that like it plays out in individual or personal hearts and at local levels, but like that's still like that's what should capture our whole worldview, is that like there's a battle for souls and like what we do matters. And it's not that we put the pressure on ourselves, but our lives are like this real, really grand scale thing, even though when we live it out, it looks like you have to get groceries and do laundry today. But like the narrative form of the gospel is really important and actually tells a way better, riskier, like bigger story than anything else is being offered. We just don't tell it like that.
Yeah. Well, and I think because there's a tension that's there. It's you're made for something incredibly huge and powerful, but you have to start small. So you have to be little, mm-hmm. and then you're actually going to engage in that adventure the way that God intended, instead of doing, hey, you're made for this huge thing. Now we've talked about it before to some extent. Now go change the world, which I think is a part of why, especially online and like in a lot of media, it's like everything is life or death, being an activist for some sort of a cause. And so like, yeah, I do feel the sense that I'm made for something huge and that I have the capacity to change eternity. And you're like, yeah, you do, but that doesn't mean you're meant to, yeah, change.
You're ready
to
do it now.
Yeah. Or that you even have that's what God's asking you. And mm-hmm. so it's easy to have that, to try and assume that connection instead of, I think that's the Christian thing, is you're made for something huge, but you got to go low and small in order for God to work in and through you, which is how Jesus did it, you know?
Or being I like your point there, Bisque, of like coming to terms that like you might not be ready for it yet too. There's a, to remember to send it to you guys, but you guys know Adam Wainwright, the pitcher for the Cardinals?
Yeah. Yeah. We're buddies. We text.
Yeah. You know, shout out. Apparently all accounts, he's like a great family guy. He just retired from the Cardinals, but he wrote a letter to St. Louis after pitching for the Cardinals for like 17 years and retiring or however long he pitched. And
did he only play
really
there?
Really good. He came up with the Braves, but he was traded to the Cardinals before he made the majors. So he's only in the majors with the Cardinals. But he told a couple of stories as like a young pitcher, and he got left off a playoff roster his first year or something like that. And just like coming to grips with the fact that like he just wasn't ready, you know, he said I just took it personally and did this and that. And but it just the fact that he was like, no, actually that was the right decision and I needed to like sit with that and grow because of that. And it's good. I enjoyed reading it. It's like, yeah,
that's cool.
It's like a good reminder of, nope, just like stay responsible for what you are responsible for, and you will, that's where it's lived out, man.
It's also easy for him to say, being on the Cardinals, that if you miss the playoff roster this year, you know you're going to get in the playoffs eventually in the next decade.
Hey, I didn't say it.
Yeah, if you're a Cubs fan, it's like, this is the year, this 20 years that we're making the playoffs.
I'm gonna need to be on there.
Kind of do or die for me. So I was praying. We got our new stained glass windows, as I sent in the dog chat. And I'm pretty pumped about them. But the windows along the sides of the chapel are angels holding these banners from Revelation. Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches, wisdom and strength. The canticle from the breviary, but it's also the entrance antiphon for Christ the King, which the whole chapel is kind of meant to bring that image to bear. Worthy is the Lamb that was slain. He's on the cross in this priestly stance, like eyes open, but slain with the pierced side and everything. We're going to have a lamb on the front of the altar soon. But like a lot of that imagery of just the eschaton, Christ in his glory, but yet still in his slain state, like giving this living sacrifice, the living water from his side. And above the angels, I was just the other morning I was praying, and above the angels, they put kind of like a heavenly city motif, you know, like little roofs of kind of Middle East looking, like Jerusalem kind of, with the domes and the gates and whatnot. And the light it was the morning adoration. So the light was coming in because it was the east side. And it just occurred to me, like, yeah, this is where we're going. We're going somewhere. Like, this is, I want to go somewhere other than here. And that there is a time when all of this will be in its fullness, all in all, unadulterated by sin and pettiness and death. And that's a good thing to keep in mind, even in the present, you know, not to like just live for the future or eat the frosting last, as we said years ago. Like, oh, I'll just have a kind of a so-so life on earth so that I can enjoy the golden city. But like to live there now, even, I think. And this gets to your chosenness thing, I think, because the way I experience that is what the kids these days are calling main character energy. Have you ever heard of that? Like where no. you're the kind of, cause I, my impression is, and this is just totally assumption, I've heard it used a few times, that like a lot of us are living living vicariously through other people's stories. Like we're just like, oh man, their life is so good. Look at how much adventure they have or meaning they have in their life or relationships. And we feel kind of like side characters in other people's stories, like, but this sort of self-conscious taking on, like, I'm the main character of my own story. So this is me making some like bold choices and I'm going to go do what I want to do kind of thing. But feeling kind of maybe I'm projecting, cause that's how I've felt a lot in my life, is that like, where do I kind of belong? Remember when the Cubs won the World Series? And I even talked about that, like feeling like kind of left out of the whole thing. Like I hoped that this would make me happy, but I'm just not a Cub. Like I didn't win the World Series, but there were some people who were just, it's so easy for them to feel like they're part of that, you know? And I think that chosenness and like just being the beloved, you know, like what the Father says to the Son in Dune, even if you don't do what I hope you'll do, which is take up this mantle of our family and bring it into even more glory. But even if you don't do that and you're kind of to other people a disappointment, you'll always be what I needed you to be, which was just my son. That makes you the main character of your story, and you don't need to live anybody else's life or even for people to know that you're living a particularly meaningful story, because you're living in a relationship with the one who knows you, who's giving you that meaning. And this maybe sounds silly, but it just occurred to me once. I was driving some people to our staff offsite, and everybody went into the gas station, like Quickie Mart, to go to the bathroom and get snacks and stuff. And I was just standing out on this like snowy road or cold January day in the middle of Indiana, pumping gas into my Honda Accord. And I just looked down at this like rusty little plaque on the bottom of the gas pump. It said Marathon. And I'm just like, this dirty concrete, this rusty, you know, thing, and like the little gas station advertisement, like pumping advertisement at me. And I was just like, this sucks. I hate the way the world is in some ways, you know, like just, this can't be where I'm destined to live forever, you know? And it actually became, because I related it to the Lord, I was like, yes, I'm here for a time and for a purpose. And like, this is part of the story. And in the end, it will make it all the more glorious. But if I think that this is where I belong, then I have to like fix it all up and make it better, rather than simply just serenely kind of walk through it with this, with this purpose, you know, that I'm going somewhere, and that's what's making the now so beautiful and me so capable of living with that energy of like, what I'm doing matters and I can give myself fully to it.
That's good. Mets, I got to go, but Mets, you can have the last word if you want it. That's good.
Well, and I think doing that also prepares you for the destiny as well. It prepares you for the end. So if you want to like, if you do want to live in the peace of Christ, like you don't have to wait for that, but that actually the peace of Christ is available now. And the more and more you live into it, the more and more you become the person who can fully live into the peace of Christ. And so it's also the way that, even if you're not ready for it right now, it's how you become ready for it. There's a super good conversation between Peterson and Barron and Father Mike Schmitz that came out. They did a panel together.
Whoa, the three of them did?
Yeah. Yeah. It's dope, crazy. Dude.
Link to it, Megan, like, please.
They didn't invite us.
No, that's crazy. Heck?
That is weird.
That was the only thing I protesteth. Mm-hmm. But Peterson asked that question, is like, I don't understand how God came to save the whole world and we say that his victory is final, and yet the world is still so fallen. And a part of the response, and I guess like a part of what I was thinking, is like, well, living into that victory is a part of how we become sanctified, like how God is actually working in and through us. So it's not just a victory that magically covers all of us and we're immediately sanctified, but it's actually walking in that. So like living into the journey, faith journeys,
man, dude. And I was just thinking about the symbolism of my experience. I described that I'm like literally on the highway at a marathon station. Like the it's so journey-ish, dude.
Is that a faith journey or what? Yes.
Man,
but it's walking it with Christ that prepares us to live with Christ. And so that really is the already, but not yet, but it's difficult because I'm not ready yet. Like that actually is the right call. Like I want to be ready now. And there's a type of impatience and lack of peace and acceptance with that. But saying like, oh no, if I am chosen, that means there's somebody else who has chosen me and is guiding me, like has created a path and a journey for me. And so it's trust. It's trust that actually allows you to walk in that.
Well, it's just letting go and let God.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh.
We're hitting them all today.
We hit some good themes tonight.
Yeah. All right, dudes, I got to pack up for this exercise.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, good to see you guys.
Three Dogs North are Juice, Seabisc, and Michael Metz. Conversations have been edited to sound smarter. Audio and transcripts of this episode are exclusive property of Mundelein Seminary and may not be rebroadcast without the express written consent of Major League Baseball.
Thank you, dogs. Thank you, dogs.
Good girl.